This has been Good Retronauts, all according to plan. The New Japan plan, that is. Everyone, welcome to, I guess this is kind of like a bonus episode of Retronauts. Back a few months ago, I recorded a segment or a conversation with Fight Club about the SNK collection because he's an SNK super fan. And now I'm here with the person who is pretty much the whip, cracking the whip on the SNK 40th anniversary collection. And that is, of course, longtime friend and one-time host of Retronauts, Frank Cifaldi.
Right?
You hosted a few episodes.
Yeah.
You did some cool episodes. The one with the
Tengen people.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I guess creative director is what I put in the credits. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Whipcracker's pretty good.
Yeah, you can make up your own title. It's fun.
Yeah.
Who cares about business cards? we are here at Portland Retro Gaming Expo, and you're showing off the, you're kind of in charge of the Video Game History Museum. Do you want to talk a little bit about that before we kick into
stuff? I'd love to, but I could fill your whole podcast. So
well, we can
condense it.
Give us the elevator pitch on it, basically.
So Video Game History Foundation is a nonprofit that I founded, I don't know, 2 years ago, something like that. And we are dedicated to making sure that historians have what they need to tell the story of video games. So mostly what that means is building a library, both digital and hopefully physical. One of the things that we do is every year, the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, we sponsor the museum. And this is our second year doing it. And this is actually the first year that we really kind of planned it from the start, as opposed to working with someone else's collection and laying it out. And what we wanted to do, we knew we wanted to do NES. Like, all the show organizers wanted that. John Hancock, who is a friend of the show, he has a nearly complete set, and we have these walls that were already built to house the Atari sets. We knew we wanted to have the whole NES set. But what I wanted to do was, okay, rather than this traditional sort of collector show museum where it's like, here's a bunch of rare things, like, that bores me. I want to tell a story. And so I thought, okay, let's just go all NES. And I'm going to build an NES exhibit that speaks to me, that tells what I think of as the NES story. So we call it Staying with Power, 35 years of the NES and its games. And the basic narrative that we're telling in this museum exhibit is that the NES started in 1983 and has never stopped. You have to know where to look. So a lot of it focuses on, and we're telling this through artifacts and ephemera. We got a lot of great stuff out there. We got the point of purchase display from the New York launch, which is that's amazing.
Yeah, that was like, the one that says you thought video games were dead. Like, even at the time, they were acknowledging video games, they're over. But wait,
yes,
we're here to save them.
Yeah, I mean that's
Nintendo's own marketing line. That's not just something that have associated with them. Like, they embrace that from the start.
To be fair, the ads that you're seeing that we put in were in trade magazines. So this is Nintendo telling toy stores, mm-hmm. like, no, seriously, it's okay now. Right. Nintendo didn't do a lot of consumer advertising, weirdly enough. You don't really realize that until you go into this stuff. But yeah, we told a lot of that. We have a lot of cool ephemeral stuff. Do you have any favorite stuff you saw? I know you went through it.
No, I mean, the most interesting thing to me was what you were telling me about the plug and play.
The plug and plays, yeah.
That were all new video games, NES games created from scratch.
Yeah.
In, 2004.
For Konami.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Well, yeah, okay, I'll go back to that real quick, which is that we wanted to tell the story that, like, the NES doesn't just stop at 94. It's like, no, it kept going. So in the late 90s, you're still seeing games made in Taiwan and Hong Kong just released constantly. And some of them, well, most of them really are like, blatantly ripping things off and downporting 16-bit games and stuff like that. But there were still original games coming out, too. I don't mean to downplay the ports, because they're actually... That's real development by real people. It's just legalities are different there. But yeah, what you were saying is that what I think is really interesting that people don't understand is around 2003, a lot of the hardware patents expire. And so in America, it is now legal to sell a cloned NES. And guess what? There have been cloned NES systems since, you know, constantly being manufactured in Hong Kong since the old days. So right,
but 2003 was when you really started to see them show up at mall kiosks
right.
and that sort of thing.
Yeah, like that's when they really started popping
and those got,
up.
Yeah, those got shut down by Nintendo, not because they were like the technology was illegal, but because
the
all
ROMs.
Of them had like, here's, you know, 101 games, most of which are versions of Contra and Super Mario Brothers.
But there were very legal ones, mostly from Majesco. And there's like a Konami 5-in-1 that's over there. There's and that is a brand new Konami product from 2004, and it has six games in it. Three of them are classic NES games running on an NES, and three of them are brand new Konami NES games released in 2004. Like Frogger for the NES came out in 2004, you know. But I don't think people think of it that way because people tend to think of NES games as being these things in gray shells.
Well, I think, you know, people think of them as things you can play in an NES.
Sure.
Which you can't really do with those plug-and-play systems unless you were to scrape the ROMs out somehow
and no one's
get them
that.
Out of the system.
No one's done that.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yet.
No one's
Isn't
done
it?
That.
It's hard. It's really hard as
well. I'm sure, because it's all like bespoke hardware and like there's probably a front end to make it complicated and so forth.
Well, the complicated part is that the ROM chips on the board are covered in this black epoxy that you cannot get rid of. And so you can't expose the ROM chip, so you can't read straight off the pins. And what you have to do, do you know Brian Parker? He runs RetroZone, Retro USB. Yeah. When Brian has experimented with dumping these plug-and-plays, what he has to do is trace every pin out on the board, put a wire on it, wire that to an NES cart, and then like start reverse engineering it through an NES connector.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work, and no one's doing that. So like that Konami stuff is not dumped as far as I know. You saw, you know, the Intellivision plug and play. Like they commissioned brand new Intellivision ports.
I didn't realize that was an Intellivision, but it was NES.
It's like, it's an NES system, and they ported Intellivision games to the NES. The Atari Flashback 1 is an NES.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. And actually, my favorite thing about the Intellivision, really quick, I put them both there. There was the Intellivision plug and play thing. But they did a second generation of it. I didn't realize that. He's like, here's the new one. Add some new games. Had Astro Smash 2 on it. They made an official sequel to Astro Smash, a fake one for the NES. And then my favorite thing is on that same package, there's a brand new game called, I forget, something something golf. And it's a brand new fake Intellivision game for the NES that they made in like 2005. It's wild. Yeah. Mm. But yeah, we want to show that stuff off and like the evolution of the homebrew scene and things like that, and kind of ended it. I don't know if you saw see the very end because your book was right next
right,
to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the very, very end, there's kind of this open-ended question where it's like we're starting to see legit companies republish their games. So are we going in the direction of vinyl where, you know, this is just going to be normal now, or is this just kind of a weird trend? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, on the floor, there's, what are they called, Infinite Lives?
Yeah.
And they're the company that does the ICs. They create the ICs for things like I Am 8-Bits, Mega Man remakes, and that sort of thing. And the NES Maker Kickstarter, like the ROM dumper that you can buy for the NES Maker project, or that you know that certain backers could get by supporting, like they've made that. So there's a company now that exists to create actual NES chips, not just, you know, like here's a Raspberry Pi that is running an emulator layer or something and barfing ROM data at you, but actual ICs.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Really interesting.
Yeah. It is really interesting that, and I don't know if Like I kind of got the feeling when I was making this exhibit, and I don't know if this is the truth or not, but I kind of feel like we've hit a plateau of like nostalgia for this thing or excitement. I don't know. I might be wrong. I might be completely wrong because Galf just sold 1,500 copies in like a day. You know, you saw that, right?
I bought one.
Yeah.
It's a new NES golf game on a cartridge. Why not get it?
Yeah. I don't know how to predict this stuff anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's probably, not that I know anything, but I feel like it's probably going to be something that kind of like you say, like vinyl, where,
yeah,
you know, like people who are really into it are really into it,
yeah,
and are enough to create a boutique market for it. But we're not going to see like new NES cartridges at Barnes and Noble. Well, I say that, but for all I know, those Data East cartridges might be at Barnes and Noble. I have no idea.
Yeah, I always like what I always think of is half price books. Like someday when we see brand new NES carts and half price books, that's when we'll know.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
But I could see it's sort of continuing.
Yeah.
And I'd actually be happy if, you know, people started focusing more on the new stuff.
Yeah.
And not so much on the old stuff, because the market there has just gotten so expensive.
That it has. Yeah.
It's really kind of unrealistic. I mean, you can still get carts for most games pretty cheaply, but.
And that's a whole other conversation that I've been having these last couple of days, where it's like the whole collectability thing. I feel like it's got to hit that comic book trajectory where it's like, no, actually the only stuff that's worth money is the dead mint, like key issues. And
right.
Like, you know, any random 1980 readable copy of X-Men is now a buck. And, and it used to be like 10.
Mm.
Yeah. I think anyway.
Yeah. And I think that'd be fine.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, totally. Then you could just get the things that you want, play them, and great. Good.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many clone systems being sold now.
Yeah.
Some really good ones too.
Yeah.
You know, in addition to like the analog systems.
Yeah.
You have
the AVS
Smoke Monster
great.
Doing the Mister or whatever it's called.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah.
And so I feel like you're going to see more and more of these like high-end
FPGA.
FPGA. I always get the acronym.
Field Programmable Gate Array.
Yeah.
Not Gate
Array. I know what it means. I just always get the letters mixed up.
Yeah.
A little dyslexia at work. But yeah, like I think we're going to see more and more of those.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are going to want to use them with, you know, the kind of ROM socket plug-in thing that Infinite Lives is making, and be able to play from original cartridges.
Yeah, I think so.
And
it's just to me, it's weird. I get records, because records are analog in nature, and you can't replicate entirely that analog signal, you know, on a CD or MP3 or whatever, I think. NES is just digital bits, you know.
I mean, I think it's mostly just having access to the code legally. You know,
sure.
People who don't want to go to a ROM site and
But like, I feel like there can be a legit, you know, solution that's legal.
Oh yeah,
that isn't buying this tall hunk of plastic. You know, like that. Like it's just this weird cage for data, and I don't. For me personally, I think it's weird. I think that. I can see a future where there's, you know, really high-end compatible consoles that can deliver these games to you in some other way. But I don't know if people want that. I think the people that like these kinds of games also like the physicality of the cartridges.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to that. Like, there is a certain thrill in plugging in a Zelda cartridge, and wow, the battery still works.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I don't know. Like, I like to document it, but I don't necessarily need to hold it in half.
Right.
I'm okay with, you know,
I'm
like
way.
An EverDrive or something.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Too.
It's very convenient.
Yeah, EverDrive is the same thing. It's the same game.
Yep.
Like, it's just in a different shell.
That's all kind of the point. We were going to talk about the SNK collection, but
yes,
you know, I do feel like the NES, you know, the museum you've put together with all the ephemera really does tie into the philosophy you've taken with the SNK collection.
That's actually true. Yeah,
I mean, Fight and I talked about the you know, the games, a lot of the games that we knew about at the time, and the games that we'd experienced, but you know, we had to kind of guess at the actual methodology behind it. And
sure.
I feel like, you know, just kind of talking to you casually and seeing stuff you've tweeted, you've dug up a lot of interesting information that no one's ever really bothered to go searching for, because SNK has like very diehard fans, but they tend to gravitate around the Neo Geo.
Yes.
So things that happened before the Neo Geo, it's kind of like you know, before the NES with Nintendo or before the Genesis with Sega, where people are like, oh, yeah, that happened, but let's talk about Sonic or let's talk about Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, because that was the thing that had cultural impact, right?
But so it's, you know, let's talk about Magician Lord, but who really cares so much about Vanguard or Psycho Soldier or something?
Yeah, well, and actually Psycho Soldier would be one of the few that SNK
that's true, that's
actually
true.
Talk
bad,
about. Right?
Bad example. Okay, yeah, so Prehistoric Isle.
Right, yeah. Or like, I mean, you saw some of the obscure ones.
We were Sasuke versus Commander.
Sasuke versus Commander, yeah. Yeah, and for me, what I wanted to do with this product was my target audience, I think, was SNK fans who don't already know this stuff, because I think that's almost all of them, you know? And I think unlike the previous projects I worked on at Digital Eclipse, you know, Mega Man Legacy Collection, Disney Afternoon, Street Fighter 30th, there's not really much of a built-in fan base for these games. I mean, there's people who, you know, maybe remember and liked things like Ikari Warriors and Athena. God bless them.
Or, yeah, yeah. I mean, if they played them on the NES first, they probably didn't like them.
But a lot of people did. Like, a lot of like, I got it for Christmas, therefore I liked it.
Right, yeah. I very, very recently, like a few days ago before this recording, recorded 2 hours of footage of Ikari Warriors on NES, which, by the way, is still not the complete game. That game just goes on for
Freaking
ever.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's such a slog. But, you know, I knew I was in for a bad time because I played it back in the day and I hated it back then. And I was much more tolerant of mediocrity in 1988.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I didn't have quite as broad a base to compare against.
Yeah.
And even then, I didn't enjoy it and couldn't beat it because the only way to beat the game is to keep abusing the ABBA code to continue infinitely.
Yeah.
And eventually that code got me so that I spawned inside of a trap. So
no,
I couldn't get out and enemies wouldn't kill me. And so that was it. I was like, okay, well, I'm done with this.
I mean, as you know, it was a Micronics.
Right.
It was a Micronics joint. So it was done very cheaply and quickly.
But I posted something to Twitter about it, and I had a lot of people who were like, oh, you poor guy. But a lot of people also were like, you know, I loved this game.
Yeah.
And I think some people were saying, thought I was trashing the arcade game, which is not the case. That game is really cool in the arcade.
It's actually
great. But on NES, it's, it's a mess, but people still love it because, you know, like, it was maybe the first co-op NES action game.
Oh, that might be.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I need to add that to my script, I guess, because
you should look into that.
There were two-player games, but, you know, you had Ice Climber, but that wasn't really the same thing. This was like a, you know, kind of just a run-and-gun, mindless action game with another person.
Yeah.
And that makes a big difference. You know, before you had Commando. That was basically the only other game in the style. That
could
was
you
single
do
player.
Two at the same time in NES?
Nope, no, it was alternating.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah, I think, and that also, I think, explains a lot of the frame rate issues and things like that, is it had to support two players simultaneous on,
and there were a lot of bad guys and projectiles and so forth. Micronics had trouble with frame rates on the best of days.
They did. Yeah, I don't know. I almost kind of respect it because I know how the NES works and I know that Ikari Warriors is impossible to do on the NES correctly. But it's not great. I would not. Okay, you should buy the SNK 40th collection.
Yes, because it's not impossible to do Fire Warriors correctly on Switch.
Right.
Or PC.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say you should buy it still and you should poke at the NES one, but play the real one. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were some great SNK NES games.
Yeah.
Crystalis still
amazing.
One of my favorites, even if it is a little grindy.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be interesting for people
Iron
to play. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting for people to play these games, you know, and experience the arcade versions for the first time, because SNK arcade games were not common in the U.S.
No.
There was a convenience store near my house when I was in junior high, you know, around the time the NES game came out that had Ikari Warriors.
Okay.
And so I did get to see it in the arcade and like play with the weird controller and be like, oh, okay.
We should talk about the weird controller.
Yeah, please
do. Loop lever joystick was the first game they used it in was called, terrible name here, TNK3. It was just called Tank in Japan. But TNK3.
Yeah, I don't know. Why did they give it, why is it three?
I don't know. I asked, we worked with a guy who was sort of there at the time in like a marketing capacity, and he had no idea.
The U.S. market?
No, Japan.
Oh, okay.
And SNK has been great about like access to Japan. Like, it's a real breath of fresh air working with them is that this is the rare Japanese company that acknowledges that people worked there before right now. Mm-hmm. You know, so like it acknowledges that there's a history and we can talk to these people.
Yeah,
if we
that's very difficult.
It's very difficult to do, and SNK has been wonderful about that. We got a lot of good insight and stuff because of it. God, what are they talking about?
The loop lever.
Oh, the loop lever joystick. Thank you. So, like, they created it for TNK3, and it's basically, if you imagine just a joystick in an arcade, you know, and you tilt to move it just like a normal joystick, but you also twist it to aim, and you can and it clicks in 8 different directions.
Right. Yeah, so it's, you know, a joystick is basically a lever that works, you know, in most cases in 8 directions.
And you can loop it around.
And right. And then also on top, it's like you have the spinner from Tempest or something.
Yeah.
So it's like 2 things in one, but you don't control it with 2 hands.
You control it in one.
Yeah. You grip it in one hand. So you're twisting
even
as you maneuver the lever. It's
not good, actually. I don't like it.
No?
I don't like the loop lever. I think that do you ever play Mad Planets in the arcade?
You know, I saw that one and it freaked me out when I was a kid.
It's weird.
It's a super weird. Who made that anyway? It was like Centauri or something
like that. Yeah. I can't remember.
That game freaked me the hell out and I never played it.
But, you know, that was another game that like obviously should have been twin stick but wasn't because they were still figuring that out. Mm. And that had a much better solution, which was it was a flight stick in your left hand and like an Arkanoid dial in the right hand. Mm. And like that works way better because you're hitting the trigger on the flight stick and you're turning with the other.
It also makes it completely impossible to replicate on a home system.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You just cannot do it. But same with Ikari Warriors, theoretically, right? But luckily for us, it is just an 8-way switch. It's not analog. You know, it's not infinite turning. It's not like Arkanoid. And so we were able to make all these loop lever games into twin stick games. We were able to sort of like, before we get to the emulator part, we had the sort of layer that was just kind of injecting things. And then it just knows if you tilt up on the R stick, you point up. And technically, like there's sort of a weird philosophical debate to have here. Cause like you couldn't snap from north to south with the loop lever.
That's one of the reasons the NES version is so bad because they tried to recreate that. Because you are rotating your character like their aim. So the sprite shifts around, like the sprite rotates to move.
You are
a slave. To mirror that,
You are a slave to their timing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, and that's been the problem with Ikari Warriors to date, if you play it on MAME or whatever, or even like SNK Classic Zero or the PSP Mini versions. The way that they solve it is you have shoulder buttons that are turn clockwise and turn counterclockwise, right? And that's just, it's not right because in the arcade game with the loop lever, you could muscle memory like 3 o'clock fire, you know, like 6 o'clock fire. You could just figure that, like you could get to a point where you could instantly do that. And to me, the only way to replicate anything close to that is to make it a twin stick game.
Right.
So that's what we did.
And I know why they didn't make it a twin stick game at the time because
it's hard.
Well,
you're talking about in the arcade.
Yeah. In the arcades. Sorry. You know, Robotron 2084 was, 1982?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and so that game did have twin sticks.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when you press in a direction to shoot, like, the right stick is firing.
Yeah.
And you don't want that in Ikari Warriors because you have limited ammo, and you also have grenades.
Yep.
So the only way I think they could have done that was to have twin
buttons
sticks with
top.
A button on top. So I don't. That seems like it might have been an easier approach than what they did.
Yeah.
But you know, it was still the period mid '80s was just everyone saying we got to do something different and unique.
Yeah.
This is the arcade. We are making our own hardware.
Right.
We're creating something, and who cares about compatibility? Who cares about sustainability? Who cares if anyone is familiar with it? You know, it thrived a lot on novelty.
It did.
So they were like, let's solve this problem in a new and different way, and maybe we'll stumble across something that's great. And I don't know that it is great, but it's definitely interesting and it works.
Yeah.
It's very distinct.
It is. I mean,
sure.
And because it existed, a lot of really interesting games happened.
Right. And you know, when you do jump into a tank in Ikari Warriors, or when you play TNK3, it really makes sense because
it feels like
your tank has a turret that rotates independently of the tank's body.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, all of a sudden it kind of comes into place, but or comes in like the, into focus. But, you know, when you're a guy like swiveling around
it
in your
feels
waist,
weird. Yeah.
It's a little odd.
You
but
can get it.
It's fine.
Like, it takes a minute, mm-hmm. and you can get it, but it's not ideal. Like, these games just feel like... I didn't know I liked Ikari Warriors until we got it working twin stick. I actually didn't know I liked it. Now I like it. And actually, I like it better than all of the ones that followed. I like it better than Victory Road. I like it better than Search and Rescue. It's actually a really cool game. I really feel like a lot of the reason that people don't talk about these games very often is that you can't maim them correctly, mm-hmm. and so they just kind of get forgotten unless you happen to have played them in the arcade or you go to Galloping Ghost or whatever.
Right.
And so, like, you know, I think our challenge was to, you know, not only sort of, I don't know, I think of this product as having to educate an audience, you know what I mean? Because, like, I might be wrong, but I don't think there's that much of a built-in audience that specifically wants to play these games. But if we have this sort of boutique package that's like, hey, you like SNK, this is where SNK came from, this is where it started, this is everything, you know, this represents everything before the Neo Geo, and if you really play the games you see the roots of the Neo Geo, like, that's what we're going for, you
right.
know, it's like I always think of these products as being like the equivalent of an art book that you play on your console that happens to have playable games.
Yeah, and you've really kind of brought that to the fore with the museum portion of this. And that even gets into, like, hey, this is what came before Neo Geo, because you're with the Micro Kit, is that what it's called?
Oh,
the
sure.
Micron Kit?
Yeah, I was showing
Micron Kit, yeah.
Microcomputer is what that stands for, yeah. Because it was, I mean, it's in the 70s, so microcomputer in an arcade game, that's new, because it's not discrete logic anymore. It's actually chips, you know. The feature that you're talking about, we put in, because we couldn't include all, I think it's like 60 games that SNK made in the 70s and 80s. We'd be working on this forever, but like we did a curated selection of them that represents the breadth of the company, I think. But then in the bonus features, we talk about literally all of them. Because it's just not done. And yeah, Micron Kit was their first series of games were in the Micron Kit series, and it was basically, like you were saying, it almost predicted the Neo Geo, because the Micron Kit allowed you to put in different Micron games and swap them out. So like Micron Block and Space Battleship Yamato, I forget what the other ones were. We know there were at least three. There may have been as many as six. We're not sure.
And even SNK's not sure.
No, yeah. No one knows.
It's really interesting.
We don't know.
But see, that was a revelation to me, because I've done research into that when I was first working on talking about the Versus system.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that wasn't the first of these. Data East had something in like 1981, 82. So they must have invented it. I couldn't find anything, you know, predating that. But then there is the Micron Kit. So that idea of like plug and play, interchangeable, almost like cartridge based arcade games has been around since the 70s. And SNK may have pioneered it.
Maybe. Actually, that's the weird thing going through this, is that there are so many things that I think SNK pioneered, but I'm not sure. Continue. I think they invented Continue in Vanguard. Like, I really can't find an earlier example of that.
And see, even games like Vanguard, like, I am aware of Vanguard.
Yeah.
It was a game that I heard about a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah, because it got home ports and stuff, too.
Yeah, and also, you know, it would just be in, like, books, like Jeff Rowan books or something like that. But it's not one that I've ever actually played. So I'm looking forward to playing this game, finally, after almost 40 years. Because I'm like, well, this is something that has been at the edge of my awareness my entire life, and I would like to know what the hell it is.
Well, spoiler, it's not 1981 anymore, so...
Oh, and I'm perfectly capable of transporting myself back in time to say, I mean, it's I've covered more than 100 Game Boy games.
Yeah, I know.
So let me tell you.
Are you over 100 now?
Yeah, it's over 100.
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks. So I'm really excited to play some of these games.
Yeah,
I mean, not just the loop lever games, but just
yeah.
other games that I'm like, oh, Psycho Soldier. Like, I know why that game is a big deal, but
right.
guess what? I've never actually seen the arcade machine for Psycho Soldier.
There you go. Yeah.
So this will be a chance to, you know, get my hands on it.
Yeah, and especially with the DLC, we were able to put in some of the what I consider more interesting and strange, more experimental stuff from the earlier 80s period. Like, I showed you Fantasy for a minute, which you hadn't seen before. That game. Oh, actually, just backtrack real quick. I also think SNK invented the boss fight. Sasuke versus Commander, I'm pretty sure, is the first boss fight. There are six distinct bosses in this very simple shooter game. All of them have different powers. They're all named, and the flyer calls them bosses. And this is like 1979.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
I think those are the first bosses.
Interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, Fantasy is, you know, one of those really weird ones that, like, you just, you know, no one played Fantasy. It's this weird game, but like, SNK in the early 80s was really trying to break new ground. I mean, not just the boss fights and the continues and everything, but Fantasy came out the same year as Donkey Kong. And it's very much in that same sense, like a narrative, you know, which is kind of a new concept. I don't need to explain that to you. You know what I mean?
Right. No, yeah. It's fine. Yeah. Like, not necessarily everyone listening does.
Yeah. And Fantasy does that, but more. Like, you saw the opening cutscene with voice acting,
right?
And like, there is an ending to the game that's like even more cinematic than Donkey Kong, because like in Donkey Kong the ending cinematic is sort of like in the map, but this one just cuts to a full, like, full screen, like, new art cutscene for an ending with more voice acting, and then it loops again. And like, you know, Donkey Kong had four distinct stages. This one has like six, and they're like, the gameplay is kind of different in all six of them. None of them are good. Like, it's not. And
that's why people remember Donkey Kong.
Yes,
Fantasy.
Exactly. Or, yeah. But like, SNK had this really weird period where they were really into like pushing the envelope on like narrative driven arcade games. Like, it was that, and there's one after that called Pioneer Balloon that's kind of the same thing, where there's like a clear narrative loop that's not as, you know, interesting as Fantasies, but I think people never really give 80s SNK the attention that they deserve, and I think that they were actually really groundbreaking and interesting. And
it's really hard to find information about SNK. I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this firsthand, but you know, when I was doing an episode of Game Boy Works on Dexterity, it was really hard to track down the specifics, like who made this game.
Yeah.
Was it actually made internally at SNK? I think I sort of pinned down that it might have been 80K, actually.
That makes sense.
Because they had released a game that was kind of similar to that beforehand. I can't remember what exactly line of logic I used for that.
Yeah.
But it kind of seemed like, yeah, so this might have been developed for them by 80K. And, you know, had other people doing their home games. And I think you said that they had all, you know, like a contractor doing a lot of their arcade games. So
they did. They kind of, yeah, I think, I'm not sure when SNK internal actually started. I don't think anyone really knows. It wasn't there. Like, I actually suspect that the first SNK internal game might have been something like Joyful Road in 84, 85, something like that. And I think everything before that was contract. Mm-hmm. Like, I know for sure that all of the like 80 through 82 games are Tosei. Well, I suspect that anyway, because we know two of them for sure, and then the rest are like on the same hardware and have a lot of the same fingerprints. Mm. And, you know, we'll never know really, but yeah. And then like Dexterity, to your point, like, you know, where did that come from? Contract would make sense, right? But then, as I was able to point out to you later, which I wouldn't have known if I wasn't talking to ex SNK staff myself and hearing this from them, that Dexterity was actually the follow-up to an arcade game that SNK had done internally in 84 called Canvas Croquis, which I don't know what that title means. What's a croquis?
I know what a croquette is.
Yeah, I was about to say, it sounds tasty.
It does.
But Canvas Croquis is a very similar game to Dexterity, and it, you know, it predated it by like 6 years, and it's like Dexterity is clearly the follow-up to that. The guy that I spoke to who was at SNK at the time called it a sequel to Canvas Croquis. So like,
okay,
that's the lineage of it. But I mean, that's one guy. It's not
right.
You know,
but I mean, did SNK didn't make a lot of Game Boy games. They might have made,
they made one.
Yeah.
They made one.
Did it make sense to, for them to have like their internal dev staff say, let's get up to speed on this portable system for one game.
So, okay.
That was released right around the time that they
were
AVS
done with doing
hitting.
It. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's really interesting. If you look back at their history, like they didn't do Genesis or Super Nintendo or anything like that. They did arcade and they did NES, and then they did one MSX port. So the Akari version, the MSX version of Akari was done internally.
Huh.
And then they did one Game Boy game, probably internally. So I think they were like toying with it and then didn't pursue it, maybe.
I assume once the Neo Geo launched, it was all hands on deck.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and actually, you know, we've dug up interviews with former staff that basically complained about that. You know, they just kind of felt that, like, we can't innovate in the arcade anymore because we're just stuck on this hardware now. Director of Akari Warriors said that, you know, in an interview once, that, like, he felt that he couldn't really have done something like Akari Warriors if he kept going on the Neo Geo, because he was just stuck with those specs made for that kind of game. But I don't know, like that, I think historically that it was a good move for them to do the Neo Geo. I think it allowed them to pump out way more games than they could have otherwise. It allowed them to like farm out games to other developers and make money off of it. You know, like I think it was ultimately the right move for him, but I do think that you lose a lot of the creative weirdness that they had in the 80s once you get into the 90s.
Yeah, and that's what makes this such an interesting collection.
Yeah. Let me see if I can count. Let's see. Akari, Victory Road, Akari Warriors 3, which, by the way, is really interesting as an arcade game. It's terrible. It's the worst game on this set, like straight up. The arcade version, the NES one's okay. But I didn't realize until we got everything working that the way you're supposed to play Akari 3 with the loop lever joystick is that you twist to do roundhouse kicks. So, like, you hit the kick button and twist at the same time. And, like, you can jump kick in Roundhouse, too.
Okay.
Terrible game, though. it just feels very unfinished. It feels like they had the tech going and they had to finish it and get it out. So, the three Akaris, Bermuda Triangle is like a shmup with a loop lever. So, it's kind of like a twin stick shmup. There's a very obscure sequel to that called World Wars.
TNK.
Oh, yes, thank you. TNK3, which is the predecessor to Akari. It stars whatever his name is, Clark, Ralph, I don't know.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, technically he gets in the tank at the beginning.
Hence the tank presence in Akari Warriors.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
I didn't realize that was like a narrative connection. I thought
there
it was
is
just
a
like
narrative
a story,
connection.
Like a, yeah. I mean, like a design connection.
Yeah, it's a narrative. Not there's not really any story to these
sure,
games.
But as much as, you know, like the shared universe.
Yes, it is a shared universe for sure. It's a canon that the guy in the tank in TNK3 is whoever player one is in Akari. I don't remember the name. Search and Rescue is another one. And that's one that no one talks about. I think it's really cool. It's like, do you ever play Victory Road?
Akari not really.
It's, yeah, because it's only the NES version's accessible,
right.
And it's really, really bad. But Victory Road is, it obviously wasn't Akari Warriors 2. They just kind of made it that at some point. But, you know, it's basically a loop lever shooter, like, in hell. You're,
yeah,
like, fighting
it's
demons.
Got, like, a weird sort of sci-fi fantasy element to it.
And Search and Rescue almost feels like the follow-up to that, but in, like, 88 or 89 or whatever. And I'd never seen it before I worked on this, but like, it's actually really fun because it's, you know, it's loop lever, aim and shoot, but then also the second button is like jump dive. And so you can like jump dive and turn and do like, you know, like Max Payne style, like flying through the air stuff, shooting
John
these,
Woo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can do that, you know, shooting like Geiger aliens with flamethrowers and stuff. And it's actually pretty neat. And that one, that one's part of the free DLC that's coming after launch. So that's something I'm really happy about too. Like that's not our decision at all. But you know, NIS and SNK decided that we're adding 10 more games for free. Actually, 11. But that one's funny because we added an 11th one. We're like, is this okay? Can we do this? And they're like, yeah, sure.
Which one is that?
It was World Wars, because we had Bermuda Triangle running, and World Wars is. Like it's a very, very similar, like it just, you know, once Bermuda's working, World Wars works. And when I say similar, it's like the same music, like they didn't even change the music. It's just a sort of a weird quasi sequel to Bermuda, but like we added an 11th for free, ourselves. Cause we just wanted, I wanted all the loop lever games to be done.
Yeah. So all the loop lever games will be on this collection.
Yep. Once you get the DLC for it, the free DLC, like it would be all the loop lever games. Okay. I should clarify all of the digital. Time Soldiers. It's another one.
Okay.
Yeah. That's technically an ADK game. Mm-hmm. That one wasn't done internally at SNK. It's done by ADK, but we included that one anyway, even though we kind of skewed more toward SNK internal than outsourced. Yeah, I wanted to make sure they were all included because, like, getting that twin stick working is not an easy thing to do. And, you know, not to super gloat or anything, but I don't know that anyone but us would bother knowing to do that and, like, executing on it. And I just, like, I want to make sure that these games are actually playable, like, forever, because I don't know if there's going to be an SNK 50th anniversary collection, you know, with guys like us working on it. This might actually be the last shot that anyone has on making World Wars feel good.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not even beyond, if you look beyond just SNK.
Yeah.
I feel like this is kind of a rare occurrence in video game curation, because you have a company that is established enough that it's still around to say, hey, 40 years of history.
Yeah.
And it has this really extensive archive and is willing to dig into that. But there aren't, well, somewhat extensive archive. Okay, an extensive catalog.
Yes, there, thank you.
yes, archive of games.
That company was bought and sold, so things got scattered.
Yeah. But, you know, so it's big enough that, you know, there is this opportunity to look back and say, hey, let's get these games out there. But at the same time, there is this element of, sort of this esoteric element about them.
Yeah.
So people don't necessarily know these games that well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's lots and lots. I mean, oh my God, the MAME list, it's just like, what are these games?
Yeah. There's
from so many companies, so many publishers, but you know, a company again, like Centauri or Universal, like they're not around anymore.
Yeah.
Who owns those games? Does anyone own those games? No one knows in a lot of cases. So, you know, for those games, we're never going to see collections, at least not, you know, for another 100 years when the copyright finally expires.
Well, then no one's going to care.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I don't know. There might be some weird market for, I don't know. I always think of, you know, when I think of a lot of the retro compilations as being the equivalent of like going to Big Lots and it's like, here's 100 cowboy movies on DVD
pretty
for
much.
$10,
yeah.
You know, and like it's there like, might be something like that.
Yeah, like those retro.
Retrobit.
Yes, it's like those Retrobit collections where it's, you know, just all kinds of random Jalico stuff on there. And you know it's just like no one has any connection to most of these games.
No, but they can get the rights to them. There's content.
Here's Mario's Mission. Enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that there's only so many companies that have the rights cleared up for all these games and they just get them out. By the way, that Retrobit thing, I got to find that. They have that. They have that console with a bunch of NES games built in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they even sell it anymore because I was on the show floor. They don't have it. But one of them that they have is the Bashy Bazook prototype.
I dumped. Think that's on their most recent one.
Yeah. Like that's probably the ROM that we dumped.
Okay.
That they just got from the internet. So I kind of want to get like the official thing that's like of the prototype that I dumped.
I have an extra one of those. I'll send it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I was so disappointed because they announced it was going to be on cartridge at CES.
Yes.
Remember that?
That didn't happen.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm going to get Bashy Bazooka on cartridge.
Yeah, I was looking.
It's going to feel like a weird
looking
loop.
Forward to like the Jaleco collection.
But. Yeah, because the Jaleco stuff's pretty good.
I mean, some of it.
Yeah.
Some of it.
I like Bashy Bazook, actually. Have you tried it?
No.
It's interesting. It's a weird sort. Like, I'm not going to call it a Metroidvania, but it's like. It's like theatrical Metroidvania, you know what I mean? Where it kind of feels like you're in a big world, and it'll do things like you'll go down and there'll be a tunnel off to the side that isn't actually a tunnel, but they'd like pepper the world up to make it look big.
Interesting.
And the English translation it's got one of my favorite video game lines that I just really loved. It doesn't sound that great in context, but it's like, you have to take an elevator to get to the boss, and you like talk to NPCs. And right before the first boss, you talk to an NPC, and it's the weird alien creature, and they're like telling you you got to get to the boss on the next floor down, and they're like, but take the elevator. We're still mopping the stairs. I'm like, that's great. That's a great line. Like, that's really fleshing out this world, in kind of a funny way too.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you're in some kind of world saving adventure, going to fight a big boss, but
yeah,
there's still people just doing
the
their janitorial work. Can you not track through their floor, please?
I mean, the world goes on even in crisis. Mm. Like, people still got to mop the stairs because they get dirty. Yeah,
that's very like Final Fantasy VII Shinra building kind of.
Yeah.
Like,
but it's just in this dumb platform game on the NES, and it's really cute.
Need to wrap up here, but
yeah.
any final words you have to offer people for why they should consider getting the SNK collection, besides, you know, what we've already talked about,
like, sure, all the features and stuff, whatever.
I'm personally excited about it. Like, I love the fact that not only are we going to be able to play something like Ikari Warriors with twin sticks, but because it's on Switch and, you know, it's going to work fine with the flip grip.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
We'll actually be able to play Ikari Warriors like in a best case scenario.
Yeah, you actually can. Yeah, it works with all of them work with the flip grip.
So I'm happy to have like played a very tiny part in making that possible. It's kind of a cool feeling.
Yeah,
I guess that you know brings my objectivity with this project into question. But
because
I don't really care.
We made the first completely. Flip grippable game? I don't know, because all the UI and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are the first certainly to have developed
doing
a game
it on purpose.
With that in mind.
Yeah,
there have been a couple of patches I think that have
okay,
like for Zakaria Pinball.
Yeah,
that said, oh hey, this didn't originally work with flip grip. We were in the wrong direction, but now we can do both.
Yeah,
so it's cool that people are doing that. But this is definitely more down my alley. It's
yeah.
Like, here's some classic games that are interesting.
That were vertical and you can play them correctly now.
Like,
yeah,
you haven't been able to play them in a vertical mode before, so now you do. Now
yeah,
you can.
I guess what I would say is that, like, you know, I don't. To your point earlier, there's not going to be very many opportunities where someone's going to put real polish and love into a collection of things that don't have a big established fan base, like. I wouldn't be surprised if this is the only product we ever get to do like this, you know, and I treated it that way. You know what I mean? Like, I really just kind of, you know, really kicked myself a lot on this project, just being like, this might never happen again. Like, it might be up to us to represent SNK's, you know, 80s catalog for the only time it's ever really going to happen. You know, we spend a lot of time just making these games feel right and giving them the respect they deserve. And I just, it's the product I want to see for these old games. Like, I mean, you know, you and I are, well, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to say this. We're retro nuts. You know what I mean? We explore, right? Like, we want to explore.
That was the
and learn,
idea behind the podcast.
Right, exactly.
That's why the name is there.
And to me, there's no, like, products that let you do that unless it's accidental. Mm. You know what I mean? Like something like a plug and play system that has like Jalico and like Pico stuff and Wisdom Tree on. Like it's just like whatever we can get the rights to. You like Caveman Ninja Kid? You know, remember that? Like that to me, like that's like accidental exploration. But this is like, we treated this like it's a, like we like to think of it more like a record label where we're curating, you know what I mean? A collection of things that's representative of what this company was. And I don't know, like I think we did a really good job on this. I hope you guys like it. Yeah, I hope we get to make more stuff like this. I would love to, you know, even with SNK, like something I've pitched internally to them is like, we should do Neo Geo Rarities. You know, just that as the title. You know what I mean? Like, I want video games to go in that direction, right? Mm-hmm. Where, like, I mean, like, I had a record back in the early 90s called David Geffen Rarities. You know what I mean? And it's just like, here's a bunch of deep cuts from all the guys on Geffen. You know, and it had, like, a Nirvana B-side that wasn't on anything else and, like, all this other stuff. And it's like, I want video games to be like that. You know what I mean? Where we understand that there people can like this stuff enough to want to learn and explore and dig and like find buried treasure like that, or acknowledge that there's value to games that aren't quote unquote good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there's games on this collection that I wouldn't call Fantasy good. Like Fantasy's not a good game. I love Fantasy. You know, like I love that bad, flawed, weird game, and I want there to be a world where there's, you know, where there's commercial viability mm-hmm. for stuff like that, and you know, so please buy this so that we can do more of them.
Yeah, well, we need to wrap, but yeah, I'm really impressed with what I've seen so far. Like,
thank you.
I can honestly say that. Just the overall package, the selection of games and the yeah. presentation and all the extras.
The watch stuff. Mode we didn't even talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, like all the stuff you put in there is really a complete package. It's like an M2 yeah. remaster, but instead of being one game, it's 20 or 30 games.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really like it's great. So I really hope this does well for you guys, and I
Me
hope
too.
That you're able to use this to go to other publishers and say, let us do this for you.
Because, yeah, I hope so too.
You know, like Konami wasn't going to do Dracula X Chronicles on PlayStation 4 until Sony went to them and were like, hey guys, can we put these games out? And Konami was like, video games have value? Okay, go ahead. So why not go to Konami and say, look at what we did for SNK. You guys have some pretty great arcade games too. Let's get Quorth and Twinbee and, you know, all that stuff that's not licensed on here. It's okay. We can skip TMNT and Aliens, but what about Contra, guys? What about, you know, like Haunted Castle? Come on, let's
well, that's its own challenge, Jeremy.
I'm sure. That's the final boss level. Like, actually, Nintendo would be final
Nintendo boss level. Is final boss level. Absolutely, yeah.
But, like, but it's
letting me
mid-boss.
Do Mother Collection right. or whatever is final boss
right.
battle.
Yeah. But this is like, Konami would be like the death before Dracula in Castlevania.
I think Konami would be the one right before Nintendo,
yeah,
now that you're
I
saying
so.
That. Like, Capcom's pretty easy. Square Enix.
That's
Square
true.
Enix
yeah.
would be the one right before Nintendo. Yeah.
But even they've worked with M2, so they're, you know, the Seiken Densetsu collection. They're
oh, you're
they're
right.
potentially open to it.
You're right.
You never know. And they've got some crazy stuff out there. You get some MSX games compiled.
Oh, man. I would love to do a Konami MSX
Or like
set.
their you know, Sharp 68000 games.
Yeah.
Or PC-88 or whatever the hell they're
talking about Square Enix still,
yeah.
right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you get Enix in there, then
yeah.
all bets are off. My
yeah.
God, their early stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get some Lolita Syndrome in there. All right, some weird,
completely unplayable stuff that we have to translate.
Visual novels, yep. Maybe not that, but there's a lot of stuff.
But Konami?
There. Konami.
Konami MSX stuff would be amazing. I'd love to do
oh,
that.
Man. Yeah, and there was a Konami MSX collection for
Saturn.
Sega Saturn, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
actually, I think there were like two or three volumes,
yeah,
two
yeah,
volumes,
so
and
too.
They compiled them into a single.
But they couldn't possibly sell that here.
Nope.
But maybe we can. I don't know. I'd like to.
I don't know. So the future is wide open for you guys.
Wait, I got it. Konami MSX and FDS, because those are both really interesting. Call it Konami on disc.
Oh, there you go. All right, so if you're listening, Konami, make it happen. Anyway, I know you've got things to do here at Portland.
Yeah, I got
so,
a panel to do.
Let everyone know where we can find you online and where we can find SNK 40th Anniversary Collection and other projects by you.
Yeah, so the foundation itself, nonprofit that I founded, we are at gamehistory.org. We have a real cool Patreon set up where you can get on our Discord and hang out and talk history and help me figure this whole thing out. And then me personally, Twitter at Frank's Folly, that's C-I-F-A-L-D-I, one word, and DMs are open, but I might not respond to you for weeks at a time because I'm a terrible person that's very busy.
All right, and you've already heard the rundown on where to find Retronauts, so you know the deal. You're listening to us now. Thanks for listening, and be sure to check out SNK 40th Anniversary Collection, which should have gone on sale very recently by the time you're hearing this. It's a bunch of interesting, some very good, some very bad games, but all curated with a lot of love and care and attention to detail, and that's great. So it's a great example of, you know, capturing not just a moment of video game history, but something much broader and more valuable, in my opinion.